done it again, NBA. Well done. This is the Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm Ben Ennis. Free agency is now officially open, but yeah, that's going to be the sideshow to the main event of the Brooklyn Nets tearing it all down. And they only built it up, what, 3 years ago? I think it was actually 3 years ago to the day on June 30th, 2019. Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving agreed to join the Brooklyn Nets as free agents. And then, you know, a bunch of stuff happened. And now Kyrie has opted in, but he was probably not going to play another game with the Nets. And Kevin Durant has officially requested a trade out of Brooklyn. Let's talk to our guy, Michael Grange, Sportsnet's own. How's it going, Michael?
Pretty well. How are you, Ben?
I'm good. I'm waiting for the fireworks to start. And no offense to Jalen Brunson and his massive contract with the Knicks.
All right. An hour before free agency opened, whatever.
Yes, that's right. Although you're not allowed to tamper, but yes. No. All right. what do you make of this Nets thing? Just like blanket, take it any way you want. KD, Kyrie, the whole thing.
Well, I guess once again, it just shows that the NBA, probably by accident, has stumbled into the perfect formula for sports in this age, right? Where, allegiances to team and city and, all the kind of things that maybe were pretty exciting about sports not all that long ago, they've kind of long since been pushed aside by, how your fantasy team's doing or what prop bets you have going or, what kind of social media drama you're following at any given moment. And they've sort of found a way to, like I say, I think unintentionally, to create a sports product that echoes, mimics, supports and encourages all those things, right? Where it's just the ultimate, if this was WWE, like if this was a true scripted entertainment product, some of the stuff would be a little outlandish, right? Like, I don't know if we can really get away with this. We got to go with something a little more reasonable. And instead, this is what really happens in the NBA, and not all the time, not every year, but it sort of seems like it happens more and more often. And this might be the peak. It might be the peak. I mean, if we look back at what's happened in the 3 years since the Nets became the Nets, when Kyrie and KD joined forces there without even having a meeting, right? They agreed amongst themselves, and then they announced themselves to the Nets, by the way, we're coming. The Nets said, great. And that was that. And by the way, neither of us can play this year. That's how it started. I guess in that context, it's not all that strange how it ended. Everything that's come in between is, just sort of fits perfectly now. It all makes sense. All the badness around Simmons and Harden and the rest of it. And on we go to another insane, seemingly more insane chapter. But that'll eventually be interrupted by the regular season, unfortunately.
Meh. But yeah, that's secondary to the drama that will, undeniably take place also during that regular season off the court. All right, so there's so much to unpack here, but there's a potential Raptors connection here, Michael. And I know it's been reported that half the league has already contacted the Nets in regards to a potential KD trade. Well, I'm not sure why it's not the 29 other teams. Like, it's Kevin Durant. He's under contract for 4 more years. Yes, he's not, I guess, peak Kevin Durant. What is he? He's 34 or he's in his early 30s. But he's still capable of leading your team to a championship if he has something around him. The Raptors have more than something. And Michael, they have probably something that the Nets would be looking to recoup in any Kevin Durant deal, and that's a young, budding superstar-type player in Scottie Barnes. Do you see a connection between the Raptors and the Nets and in a potential Kevin Durant trade?
Not really. I think I wouldn't be surprised if the Raptors aren't
contacting aren't trying to put something together. I think it would be next to impossible to do something that didn't include Scotty Barnes. I think the challenge for the Raptors is, you know, putting together enough contracts and enough attractive players that, A, the Nets would be interested, and B, Kevin Durant, when he got here, would go, I want to stick around, and this is a place I can win at. And so I think that's maybe a bit of a challenge, but that said, nothing's impossible. I just would rate it a little bit unlikely. And I would also sound a little note of caution on a couple of fronts. One, Kevin Durant's not a kid. Like, I mean, he's still, did you say, he's still maybe the most dangerous single-game player in the league. But he's, how many of those games does he have in him in the regular season, let alone a playoff run? I think the fact that he's quick to bail on, a team with 4 years left on his contract, I mean, it doesn't give you a ton of confidence. He won't bail on your team. That would maybe give me a bit of pause. And then I think another factor that is worth considering a little bit here is, we've seen the super team Lakers fail with no prospect of them kind of reviving. We've seen the super team Nets implode with they could literally be off the map as a franchise for the next 5-7 years, given they've sent out all their picks to get the players they have in the first place. And then, the Clippers, the jury's still out, right? Like, I mean, we don't know how the Clippers are going to do. They've done nothing, really, since they made their big coup in the summer of 2019. So if I'm, an NBA team and I just watched the Golden State Warriors win their title, I saw the Raptors win it the year before the Lakers did it, maybe I just go, I'm gonna stay the course here, and see if I can get it done this way. And maybe there'll be another moment where, the time will be to make a big splash. But I would say in the Raptors' timeline, I don't know if that's this moment. But I could be wrong. But those would be my I think thoughts that I would have if I was an executive trying to get into this frenzy.
Wait a second, though. You mentioned the 2019 Raptors team that won a championship. They did it kind of the way that a team acquiring KD is hoping to do it, right? A distressed asset, superstar player acquiring. Now, it's not entirely comparable, right? But the Raptors did give up, thought, something of consequence. And DeMar DeRozan and a lot of people at the time thought he was the best player that the Raptors had. And I think subsequently history would show that it was Kyle Lowry, in fact. But, is there not a comparable there at all that the Raptors were a good team and a playoff team but not a championship team until they got the championship player? And that doesn't happen very often. And the Raptors maybe it felt at the time that it was like once in a generation – trade that was possible. Well, it turns out it's twice in a generation because this guy's now available.
It's twice in 3 years. Yeah. That's every other year, I guess. What do I know? I think this is rare. It's gonna, it could keep happening the way this league's going. Yeah, I mean, that's a fair point. But I would also say that when the Raptors made that move, they were a deep team that had kind of exhausted a lot of options and were able to make a trade like you're referring to, and basically keep all their most important players and have a deep nucleus that incoming Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green, don't forget, could join. So can that happen again? Maybe, but I just don't know if the Raptors are going to be in a position to outbid what's out there. And as I said, Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant just got swept by the Boston Celtics, right? So I just don't know if you're all but guaranteed to get what you think you're going to get at this stage of Kevin Durant's career. I could be wrong. That's all. And I would point out too, right, is when Kawhi Leonard trade happened, I mean, that was a hugely high-risk trade. I mean, it was very risky. It wasn't guaranteed that Kawhi Leonard was going to come. It wasn't guaranteed that Kawhi Leonard was going to be able to play. It wasn't guaranteed that he was going to be able to complete the season. And, you know, and sure enough, at the end, and, you know, it kind of has set the Raptors back since. So it's kind of, you know, there's, it's not quite as simple as it all looks, I guess, maybe.
Yeah, they won a title, though. So, it worked.
Absolutely.
Out.
They won a title. They won a title, but we'll never know. Well, don't get me. I won't go down this rabbit hole. Forget it.
They might have won one with DeMar DeRozan, is what you're saying. All right, I'll finish the thought. Okay. Can I throw a hypothetical at you? Not even a hypothetical.
That's all we're doing, Ben.
You're right.
You can throw more hypotheticals at me.
Okay.
We have yet to speak anything related to a fact.
No.
Because it is the NBA.
Well, a reported fact is that Kevin Durant wants to leave the Brooklyn Nets, who, as you rightly said, were swept with a healthy Kevin Durant and a healthy Kyrie Irving. But, yeah, they didn't have a ton of time together. And, Ben Simmons didn't play, and he was a part of that team. I know it must have been infuriating for Joe Tsai, who's, like, used to running businesses that, you know, the employees do the things that they're being paid millions of dollars to do, and things go according to plan. And that must have been so infuriating to go through that season and the headache that was Kyrie. But if I'm reading what's happened subsequently in the last couple of weeks correctly, that Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving are still tight. Like, they want to play together. And this is not Kevin Durant being sick of Kyrie Irving. This is Kevin Durant being upset at the Brooklyn Nets for not wanting to extend Kyrie Irving forever and ever and giving him the max money. They were not going to do that. And my hypothetical to you is, Michael, so the Raptors don't have to do anything. The Brooklyn Nets are already pot committed. They went down this road. They and just, you know, before last season were preseason favorites to win an NBA title. Shouldn't they have just eaten it and said, you know what, we're already here. Like, what are the next half decade to a decade look like as we try and recoup the assets we gave up to organize this super team the last 3 years? Whatever, Kyrie, you're a pain, and this is horrible, and we hate it, and it's not morally right, but here's the max. Run it back until yes, it is scorched earth. Either we win a championship, or it's the worst thing in history. Shouldn't they have done that?
No, I don't think they should have done that. No. I mean, I understand what you're saying, right? And to an extent, that's how the Nets played this whole thing up until very recently, right? Like, they acquiesced. And by the way, the one guy I think we can demonstrably not take team building / free agent advice from is Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
Right? And it was kind of bowing to, hypothetically or reportedly, some of Kevin Durant's wishes that created a lot of these problems, right? It was Kevin Durant who wanted DeAndre Jordan. It was Kevin Durant who wanted, Atkinson fired and Nash hired. It was Kevin Durant who, you know, wanted, you know, they've kind of been sort of bending to his wishes all the way along. And then when Kyrie Irving wouldn't take the vaccination, it was Kevin Durant who wanted, well, let's just play him on road games. And that created problems with Harden. So I just think it's a player's league. I mean, there's no question about that, but there is a limit. And if you as an organization only do as your players wish, I think you're going to have a problem because, you know, there is a checks and balances, I think, that need to be observed. And, you know, the players, they're incredible at playing. They may not be as incredible as seeing the bigger picture in terms of some of the, you know, seeing everything that goes into putting a team together and having an organization run. I'm not saying they're not capable of that. I just think that it's not in their minute-by-minute job description. And so, I mean, I think there's a lot more examples of teams kind of getting steered wrong by overly kowtowing or overly trying to appease star players. And there are examples of organizations where, you know, let's just take Steph Curry and the Golden State Warriors as an example, right? Like, he kind of does, you know, I'm pretty sure he gets consulted on a lot of stuff, but I think the sense is he does a pretty good job of, you know, respecting boundaries, and you know, all he's done has been to 8 finals and or 6 finals and won 4 titles. So, you know, I think that needs to be kept in mind too.
Yeah. And especially when it comes to Kyrie Irving, right? Like, I don't think
And I mean, that's another thing. Like, Kyrie Irving doesn't deserve it, right? Like, that's another point. And the funny thing about Joe Tsai, I don't know all that much about him, but I know his other passion is lacrosse. Like, he's a big booster for Yale lacrosse. I think he's got some ties to some lacrosse up here in Ontario, strangely enough. And I mean, I would be very interested to hear his interpretation of, you know, some of the things that go on in the NBA versus some of the things that go on in some other sports, right? Like, I mean, but that's neither here nor there. Right? I just think that if you're an employer and, you know, do you give more money and longer term to your most troublesome employee who has yet to provide the service or even the hint of the service that has been promised? I mean, if you do that, you're a fool, right? You are a fool. And you know, the NBA doesn't always correspond to normal business practices. In fact, rarely. But I think in this instance, I think it's called good money after bad.
Yeah. Well, but at least with Kevin Durant, you can assure yourselves of contention. And, you know, there'll be teams lining up to give up everything for his services. And he is under contract for 4 more years. Is it not telling, Michael, and by the way, normal people keep the world going, but those who dare to be different, they lead us into tomorrow. And
which
it's
are we, Ben? Which are we?
Yeah.
Are we keeping the world going? Are we leading the world greater tomorrow?
Well, I'm confused because I imagine Kyrie sees himself as different, and I would absolutely have taken the money too. So I don't know. I'm confused by that one.
Yeah.
So he opts
in. I don't think that was all that different.
No, it wasn't.
It was a very conventional decision Kyrie made.
Yeah, I think it's over for him though. I don't think anyone can even trick yourself into, like, you know, in a world in the NBA where just everybody, you know, can you know, James Harden gets a million chances, and Kyrie has been given a number of chances, and things didn't go well for him in Boston, but still there was this perception that, you know, he's a troublesome character, and boy, he's not maybe the greatest teammate, but he's a baller, and he can help us win. Like, that they had no takers on a potential sign-and-trade with him, is that not an indication that it's over? Like, as far as any team believing that other than the Lakers, who are... Which would be hilarious, a hilarious reunion between he and LeBron James. But other than them, the team that is desperate and actually has a horrible contract to shed in Russell Westbrook, that nobody was interested in Kyrie Irving.
Yeah, I mean, I think it just shows that eventually you get called on your BS, right? And, you know, what could Kyrie Irving do or say at this point that anyone would look at him and go, yeah, I trust you, right? Nothing. Nothing. So it doesn't mean he's still not one of the most gifted, entertaining, capable basketball players, you know, of a generation. Like, there's, you know, I could go on for a long time about how special I think a player Kyrie Irving is, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like, it just doesn't matter. And, you know, so, but he'll end up somewhere. And, you know, I think the narrative inevitably will be that, you know, he's going to prove somebody, he's going to show them, he's going to behave, he's going to do something. And maybe he'll be that more, you know, he was motivated to take, to know that $6 million is more than $36 million, or sorry, less than $36 million. So maybe he'll be motivated that one good year could yield him another $100 million. And maybe that'll be enough. But, you know, I wouldn't want, I mean, I think somebody's going to take a chance on him. Like I say, the Lakers are pretty desperate. So I don't know how a deal could come together, but, you know, because it's only a 1-year thing, you know, someone's going to take a chance on him is what'll happen. But, you know, that's what it is. It's someone's just flipping a coin. A lot of them, actually.
Yes, a lot of coins, but dare to be different. This just coming across the wire. Woj just tweeted out, according to his agent, so that's a pretty reliable source, that the Raptors have agreed to a 3-year deal with Chris Boucher on a $35 and a quarter million dollar deal. I mean, you talked about this in your latest on sportsnet.ca. Does that seems equitable for Boucher?
35.25? I think he was going to get something more than the mid-level being about $10.5 million. The question was a little bit more on term. I kind of thought it might be around 2 years, 24. And then the question I would have is that third year fully guaranteed? I suspect it might not, regardless, I think it's a good deal. I think it's a good deal for Chris. I think it's a good deal for the Raptors. I think, the way he played in the second half of the season, which was, it was really fascinating to hear him talk about it in real time, about the kind of revelation he had and the awareness, the self-awareness he developed to really embrace what his role was and what he could do to excel in that role, given his gifts, and then go out and do it, of course, I thought was very compelling. And, to get a guy who's going to play the way he played in terms of, the full effort, the full energy, attacking offensive glass, flying at shooters. I think his three-point shooting will be a little bit better than it was certainly first half of last year as the shot selection tidies up. I think it's a really valuable piece. And, I know talking to people in the organization, he's made himself part of the fabric of that organization. I think his story is kind of comparable to a lot of other stories on the team, maybe even more extreme version of it in terms of where he's been, what he had to go through to get to the league. And, and even though he is 29, like I find him to be a very young 29, I still think he's got more to gain as a player. So, I think it's a really good deal.
Yeah, I'm a young 38. That's what I tell people.
exactly.
It's a good day to be an NBA player from Montreal. Lou Dort, 5-year, $87.5 million deal.
Wow.
To stay
with the
Oklahoma.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. at least they're not giving up players anymore. Like that's and good on Dort, who's a fun, great defensive player. That's a lot of money. Holy
yeah.
cow.
Well, it's kind of interesting because I actually think a little. He's in town for the Canada basketball stuff, and I said, "You come to the Raptors? Like, what's going on?" He just kind of laughed, but I said, "Good luck." He shrugged his shoulders and smiled and kept going. But it was interesting because by making him a restricted free agent, I think the Thunder really signaled to the league that we wouldn't be doing this unless we were serious about matching whatever anyone's going to bring to, and. And so people are saying, well, could he come to the Raptors? And I go, well, the most they can offer him is 4 years, 44. And I'm pretty sure that, OKC's going to match that. And clearly they were ready to double that. So that's awesome. I think it's a great, that's an incredible story, right? He was undrafted, came out after 1 year at Arizona State, went undrafted, had to G League it, really didn't seem to have a niche in the NBA, and forced his way in. And has kind of slowly, incrementally improved as an offensive player without losing his identity as defenders. And, to see him get paid like that is just a great, great, great outcome.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we let you go, one last potential Raptors big swing, and it does feel like this is going to be an offseason of incremental improvements and nothing massive, but if it's not Kevin Durant, how about Rudy Gobert? Because the Raptors, obviously he could use a rim protector. They have, they're not as switchable, definitely, with Rudy. But do you see a potential fit this offseason with a guy that might be on the move from Utah?
I don't. I think only if the market for Gobert really somehow collapses to the point where you could do it with Gary Trent and, a few spare parts and some picks. But I think the team is very committed to not trading OG Anunoby. And so I just don't see how Utah would do a deal without OG Anunoby because the reason they'd be, they've been perennially short on wing defenders. So I just don't see it. I think that they're going to try and there's a guy, Isaiah Hartenstein from the Clippers, who statistically is, almost as good a rim defender as Rudy Gobert. In fact, weirdly, was better than Rudy Gobert last year. So maybe I think that they're going to try and go a little bit different direction than something big and splashy.
Okay. That's fine. That's perfectly fine. I like that. Michael, despite it sounds like a pejorative to call you normal, I think we do need normal people to keep the world going. And I'm fine being one of those
normal.
People.
Probably yeah. normal. And I don't mean that to anyone who's not normal. That's fine if you're not normal. I'm just saying. What's normal? Yeah. We don't know. Yeah. We don't even know anymore what's normal. I just keep the world going. I don't make it. I don't. What's the other part of that quote?
Hold on. But those who dare to be different lead us into tomorrow. So we can just live in today.
Right.
Today was a good day. It was beautiful.
I'm just trying to help the world, get from sunrise to sunset. And Kyrie can take care of tomorrow. How's that?
That's a couple of normal guys having a basketball conversation. Michael, thanks as always.
All right, Ben. Thanks. Bye.
So, yeah, there is Michael Grange, Sportsnet Zone. Boy. So KD, as of this moment, still a member of the Brooklyn Nets. By the end of the show, who knows? Kyrie Irving as well. But I don't think you're pleased necessarily, unless you are the Lakers. And that seems like the one and only place that he will end up going. By the way, he could have gone there if he opted out of his contract and then signed there as a free agent. But of course, no, money is sort of important when it's close to $40 million of those dollars. But yeah, any other franchise, you're upset if your team trades for Kyrie Irving. When we come back, speaking of trades, the Blue Jays need to do a bunch of them before the end of July, early August, because the bullpen is perilously thin. The rotation is going to feel thin as well when they play a doubleheader this weekend against the Tampa Bay Rays. Let's talk to John Morosi of MLB Network next as the Fan Drive Time continues. I'm Ben Ennis, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Great daily gambling advice from JD, Blake, and Ailish in the Fan Morning Show's Wake and Rake. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I am Ben Ennis. Happy Canada Day Eve, if that is a thing. I bet you our next guest, he celebrates Canada Day and Independence Day, I'll bet, being from a border state. John Morosi of MLB Network sending us into the weekend. How's it going, John?
Ben, happy Canada Day to you, to all of our listeners this evening. And yes, I love the Canadian holidays. Victoria Day, also a great holiday. And of course, a year ago, celebrated Saint-Jean-Baptiste Day in Montreal, which is pretty memorable way to celebrate that as the Habs advanced to the Cup Final, which seems like a long time ago. And now have the first pick there in the draft next week.
No doubt. All right, so the Blue Jays are not done with the beast of the American League East after taking 2-3 from the Boston Red Sox to start this 8-game homestand. They got 5 in a row against the Tampa Bay Rays, and the starter tonight getting game one is a guy that's been the subject of much conversation in Blue Jays land recently, John Yusei Kikuchi.
Sure.
He's been just like flatly horrible in an overall sense this season, and especially recently, like just cannot get through even 3 and 4 innings. It's a 3-year deal, so the Blue Jays are committed, and he's starting today, but, I mean, things could change. Do you think the Blue Jays, like, it is early, though. I mean, we're not quite through June. It's the last day of June. Is it too early to say that this was a massive mistake, this signing?
Well, I think it's a fair question because, obviously, we're halfway through season one, and simply put, he has to be better. And I listened to your conversation with Caleb earlier in the week about what to do next. I think that you both made a lot of really good points. The reality is he has an ERA above 9 this month. And simply put, you cannot afford to have that be the case on a continual basis for one of your starting pitchers, not only because of the performance that it makes it difficult to win ball games, but what it does to your bullpen. And when you constantly have to cover 6 innings or more every time he starts, it's just not sustainable. And then you have to ask why, and is there an injury, or what could be the issue? I would point this out, though, Ben, and you look at his career overall. His ERA this year is in the low 5s. It's like 5.06. His career ERA in the major leagues, career, including this year, is 4.99. He's not that far off right now of being the pitcher that he has been for the majority of his career. I think when the Jays signed him, the idea was that he was going to give them something approximating what he had done last year in the first half when he was an all-star. But he certainly tapered off towards the end of the season last year, and it just his stuff has not bounced back, and the command has not been there. He's got one of the worst strikeout-to-walk ratios in the American League right now. So there's no two ways about this. It has to get better, the performance, or do they look at the physicality of things and say, is there a reason to put him on the injured list? Do you move him to the bullpen, let him work some things out? But I would say, Ben, that he probably has one or two more starts to show there's a turnaround. And if there's not, I really don't think he's long for the rotation right now. And certainly, if that's the case, and if he's getting bounced in the rotation after the first half of his first year, you would have to say that the signing is not at all working out the way the Jays had expected.
Yeah, no, and not all ERAs are built equally, too. You know, yeah, having an ERA over five, but you can't get through three innings has been doubly hurtful for a Blue Jays bullpen that has been used and is pretty banged up right now. But this is a week where you got a lot of games. Like I said, a five-game series. You don't see all that often, John, with the doubleheader on Saturday. Do you think we see more of these doubleheaders? I know it's a product of the delayed start to the season because of the lockout, but I'm a fan of the occasional, you know, scheduled doubleheader. Do you think that's something that baseball might look at keeping going forward?
You know, it's an interesting question. I think it's what we're seeing right now with the Peacock games on Sunday mornings, which I know the Jays have a couple coming up later on this month. That has become a feature now routinely where you've got the unique either 11:30 or noon start on a Sunday, and we're seeing new different creative things happening with obviously these doubleheaders scheduled because of the lockout. But I do think fans enjoy them, and certainly in Toronto it's more of a novelty because with the lack of a rainout since the days of Exhibition Stadium, you don't often get a doubleheader. And so I think there is a certain novelty to it, and I would think that fans have always really enjoyed them, especially when the doubleheader comes when the weather is great and on a weekend like this, whether it's in Toronto or certainly the weather has been great here as well of late. So I think that fans enjoy them. And I also look at the future and say, once you look at the different mathematics of the league and the commissioner has talked about getting to 32 teams and what that's going to look like, and hopefully the sport is there by the end of this decade, I think a lot of those scheduling wrinkles are there. And I also believe that whether it's the early starts on Sundays or different schedule modifications that have occurred, the unique site games like in Williamsport and the Field of Dreams, players have enjoyed these experiences. That they have not been looked upon as being drudgery or anything that's a negative experience at all. So I do think that the seven-inning doubleheaders last year were quite popular and I think are a little bit easier and more fan-friendly. It might be difficult to get those reinstituted, but I personally like them because it made for a little more urgency, and I think we're a little easier on the bodies of the players and I think on the schedules of the fans as well.
Great story yesterday in Major League Baseball that you got to see in person. Mark Appel, former first overall selection, making his Major League debut like almost a decade later, and obviously not with the team that drafted him, the Houston Astros, but with the Phillies now. I mean, just take us through that story, John, because it's a crazy one.
Really is, and certainly it was unique to be there and to cover it up close. It was interesting, Ben, our conversation before the game with Rob Thompson, of course, the first Canadian manager since the 1930s, managing the Phillies now, and had a nice talk with him about his roots. And we were talking about just his pitching plan for the game, and as he was sharing with our broadcast crew and Brian Kenny and Dan Plesak and myself, he sort of said, you know, I'd like to try to get Appel into this game if I can find a spot for him. That he had been up, he had not been able to get into a game yet. And so as the game was going on, and I think we all have the indication that he probably wasn't going to be in there to protect a one-run lead in the eighth inning for his major league debut. And so as the Phillies were trailing in the game, I was actually saying to our producer on TalkBack and having a conversation back with the truck that, hey, this might be Appel's game. Like, we got to be watching for this. And sure enough, eighth inning comes, and he's starting to warm up. And so to be there and to, you know, I got on my phone and got video of him running in from the bullpen. Because you think about what he has been through. He gave up the game in 2018, shoulder surgery. He had all the promise in the world, and I think the injuries were an issue for him, just the burden of the expectations. Last year he had shared publicly that he had gone through depression starting back in 2014, very early in his pro career. And I really believe, Ben, it's just such a it's such an empowering moment when an athlete shares so profoundly and so candidly their journey in mental health, and I think just continues to normalize the conversation around it. And on a day like that, where I was able to ask Mark about that experience, and he referred to his own belief and his own brokenness as a person and how coming to grips with that has helped him in his career. So it was just a really powerful interview to be a part of. I credit Mark for just being so honest. And I think, Ben, there's probably a lot of people out there that heard that interview, and I hope gain some strength from it, because I think it's something that we can all learn from and find strength in, and to think about his long journey to that point and that moment. And by the way, his first pitch was a 97 mile an hour sinker. That was that was a pretty devastating pitch. So it's not as though this is just a charming story to get him back to the big leagues. He can still pitch, and pitch very well. So I think this is not the last chapter of the Mark Appel story. It's just a new beginning of it. So 9 years to the month that he was drafted first overall, Ben, he's in the big leagues. It's an amazing story there for Mark at the age of 30.
No, I love that baseball can create stories like that. And the Blue Jays kind of have a similar one in Matt Gage, the 29-year-old rookie who's just spent a lifetime in the minor leagues and finally getting a kick of the can. Obviously not a bonus baby, not somebody with the expectations of a Mark Appel. But, yeah, it doesn't happen in the NHL, right? I mean, I guess it does occasionally, but it just feels like baseball does lend itself more to those stories where guys can bang around for forever, and then all of a sudden it clicks, either it's with a pitch or finally you get a chance at the major leagues as a hitter. I love stories like that.
No, it's a very, very well said, Ben, and I think that's one of the reasons why, whether it's just the mental toughness of the player to go through that journey and to suffer all the challenges that are inherent in the minor league experience for most people. But I also think it speaks to the importance of coaching. And we're seeing now an interesting phenomenon in baseball where you're seeing college programs hiring away major league coaches in season. And I think it just speaks to, for everybody, what it means to have a great mentor and a great teacher. And in baseball, we've got more numbers than we know what to do with. And yet, I really think that it comes down to the comfort of the player on the field and what it takes to get that player comfortable and the right voice for that player to get there. Because you can go to a pitching lab and there's a lot of analytics that help, but I really think that it's that human element of finding that comfort on the mound, whether it's a Matt Gage story or a Mark Appel story, or even, I think to some extent, you think about Jose Bautista's journey and how long it took him to establish himself and what an amazing career he had in Toronto after not really becoming an everyday player until his late 20s, early 30s. So it's an amazing game. I think you're right. In hockey, you don't quite see that same journey necessarily very often. Maybe for a goalie, you think about Tim Thomas and his story, it's pretty rare that you see it in hockey. And in baseball, the sport does gift us with these incredible stories.
Different deal for Juan Soto. That guy was just born being able to hit a baseball, and he's done it very well since he entered the major leagues. Hector Gomez reported that the Nationals have now upped the offer significantly, $425 million over 13 years, which is zoning in on Mike Trout land, and there's two more years of control for Soto. So, like, it does feel like we are beyond the Nationals trading Soto. Does it feel like this is now just a matter of time before the numbers match up for him to remain in Washington?
I do think so. I really do. And obviously, let's remember a couple things here. Number one, the Nationals are up for sale. There is right now, I'm sure, behind the scenes, plenty of conversation about the future of the franchise. And when you look at the way they've played, Strasburg has been injured for obviously a lot of time the last couple of years. They really haven't had and don't really have a superstars in their prime on that roster aside from Soto. And I really believe that when you're thinking about the long term and selling that franchise, it is a better property just from a business standpoint with one of the best hitters on the planet than it is without him, just from a standpoint of the business. And obviously it's a huge amount of money, more than $400 million over 13 years. But you know, he hasn't been off to the greatest of starts. I think you look at it, and if you're Juan Soto, what are the reasons to say no at this point? Mm-hmm. And once that number starts with a four, Ben, I mean, that's a pretty substantial amount of money, and there's a lot of downside risk to not accepting that deal. So do I know that it gets done? No. But if they're still talking about it at that level, and those numbers sound about right in terms of what it would probably take him to accept it, so whether it gets done this week or soon, hard to say, but I do think an extension right now certainly is trending in the direction of being more likely than a trade for Juan Soto.
This Freddie Freeman story continues as it's, you know, his agent has now responded after, you know, claiming that there was a false narrative created that he didn't relay the information to Freddie Freeman and the contract negotiations with the Atlanta Braves that he eventually moved on and signed with the Dodgers. You know what? I'm interested in how his Dodgers teammates feel about this, because it's pretty clear, John, that Freeman wishes he was a Brave and wishes he had taken the money that they offered him, but there's no take backs. Like it's done. The ink is very much dry. Do you think there's a potential, I don't know, weirdness or some fences that need mending in LA?
I think we've already seen it, to be honest, with the way that Clayton Kershaw reacted over the weekend about hoping that we're not second fiddle, as Clayton had said it. The reality, though, is Freddie is, you look over his last 10 games in the midst of everything that's been happening, he's still batting better than 300. He's still producing. He is someone that I think has done a better job than anyone could expect in terms of compartmentalizing what has been going on. And you look at his OPS plus last year, which was 133, it's better right now. The numbers look almost the same as they were a year ago. So if he's distracted, it doesn't look like it on the field. That's number one. That's the salvation, is that he's playing and hitting. And Dave Roberts said as much to The Athletic here recently that it's he's still hitting. So there's not much to take issue with there. I think that if he feels as though that the process did not go the way it was supposed to with his agent, which clearly, based on his the way things have played out in the last several days, it may be true. I think his players or his teammates will give him a measure of grace to feel however he needs to feel, work his way through it. I do think at some point in time you have to close the book, but I think while he works through the process with his agency and whatever the next steps are, I think that there has to be some degree of support by the team. But I agree, Ben, that at some point you've got to turn the page, because Matt Olson has signed long term in Atlanta, Freddie has signed long term in with the Dodgers. He is from California. His wife is from California. That's their home now. And so I don't know that there's really, to your point, Ben, much that can be done to address the situation beyond whatever happens behind closed doors between him and his agent. But I think, and I'll make this point broadly speaking, there was probably more that could have been done on all parties, Braves, agent, and Freddie, to stay there in Atlanta. Didn't happen. And I think as he works through this, the most important thing is he's still hitting. And as long as the performance is there, I think that will help allay a lot of the concerns that may exist in that clubhouse.
Okay, before I let you go, like I feel like it's now incumbent on me to advocate for Shohei Ohtani. I feel like people have They've like gotten bored with the story. He's a better pitcher this year. He just went 5 2/3 scoreless, striking out 11 White Sox yesterday. Now, offensively, his numbers are slightly down, except in June, he's the same guy. He's OPSing 973. He's doing it again, John. Like, this is, we're getting to the point, and interesting timing, like a year and a half away from his free agency, that you can count on Shohei Ohtani to do this year over year, it seems like.
It's incredible. And just check this number out. Strikeouts to walks this year, almost 6. That is an extraordinary ratio. 101 strikeouts against 17 walks in 74 innings. Ben, that is extraordinary. And if he wins the MVP again, I would have no issue with it. How could anybody take issue with this level of historic performance? I know there was the argument last year by some people to say, oh my gosh, well, are we just going to give Ohtani the MVP every year if he keeps doing this? And the answer is, yeah, we will, because this has never been done before. And so, with all due respect to Judge and to Trout and the others, and listen, Judge is having an extraordinary season, but Judge doesn't pitch. And if Ohtani keeps this up, Ben, it will be, see, this will be a really interesting debate, because I don't think that, for as amazing as Vlad was last year, the Jays didn't make the playoffs, and you look at the overall narrative of the season, and it was the first time we'd seen Ohtani do it. That was extraordinary. Now, if he does it again, but he's not necessarily quite as dynamic offensively, maybe a little bit more dynamic on the mound, but Judge hits 60-plus home runs and gets the Yankees to the playoffs with the best record by far. Let's say they win 110 games. It's a different conversation, and that's where it's like, Ben, we thought the Cabrera-Trout debate 10 years ago was pretty good. Ohtani with a 60-plus homer Judge debate, we'll be talking about that one day by day, my friend, and you can call me back anytime on that one.
I can't wait. Yeah, I already started that conversation. But, yeah, no, I can't wait to have it because, yeah, I see the arguments on both sides, but, you know, what this guy's doing I've never seen before. John, always a pleasure. Happy Canada Day. Happy Independence Day as well, if we don't speak to you.
Thank you so much, Ben. We'll catch up next week. Derek Lalonde, by the way, good hire by the Wings. Just broke a little bit ago. Stevie Wise got his guy, knows him well from Tampa. Good hire for Detroit.
Ooh, nice. I didn't see that. Thanks, John.
All the best, Ben. Thank you. Happy Canada Day.
Yeah, you too. There is the great John Morosi of MLB Network. You know what time it is. It's time for Last Call, brought to you by Bet Rivers. It's a whole new game. The Blue Jays starting, you know, the traditional 5-game series against the Tampa Bay Rays tonight. And the Blue Jays, once again, favorites. They were favored in all 3 games against the Red Sox. But this one's a bit of a shocker, despite the fact the Rays going with an opener here. But Yusei Kikuchi is going to pitch this game. He's going to throw the first pitch of the baseball game. And the Blue Jays still favored, -143, according to Bet Rivers. The Rays are +123. Total runs just under double digits at 9.5. Jays, if you like them and you like them to score a bunch of runs, which parenthetically they might have to win this baseball game with Yusei Kikuchi on the mound, +220. If you like the Rays, plus the over, I kind of like the over in all facets in this one, +280. Tampa to score first and win, +200. Kikuchi's strikeout total, it's 4.5, which seems low, except it's hard to strike out 5 when you're only lasting 2 innings. But the over is plus money, +120, over 4.5 strikeouts, under 4.5 strikeouts, -162. How about this? Not too early to look at World Series odds. And at the very top, the favorites, there are 2 of them, and you might expect that they're these teams. Dodgers and Yankees tied for the lead of +450 as World Series favorites coming up. Runner-up position, the Houston Astros +600, and the New York Mets, who might be getting their 2 great pitchers back, Jacob DeGrom and Max Scherzer, +750. Kind of like that one as a bit of a long shot bet. Hard to call the team with like the highest payroll in baseball a long shot, but when the Yankees are on pace for 130 wins, I think I'm well within my rights to do that. That was Last Call, brought to you by Bet Rivers. It's a whole new game. Blue Jays and Tampa Bay Rays, the first of five tonight down at Rogers Center. Beautiful night for baseball. Beautiful weekend in an overall sense for baseball. Gabriel Moreno is doing the catching tonight as Alejandro Kirk is back in the lineup after getting plunked yesterday, causing a bit of a brouhaha. He's the DH and hitting fourth. Caleb Joseph and Ben Wagner have the call for you. Have a great long weekend, everybody. We'll be back on Monday. This has been the Fan Drive Time. I'm Ben Ennis, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.